Thanks to everyone for coming out this Sunday night at 5 o'clock. And thanks to those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes. We invite your correspondence, comments, feedback by emailing us at utahchristians@gmail.com. We also have a membership class on our website at utahchristians.org. I'd like to thank those that have taken membership class, become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything is inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Today we'd like to talk to you about living without crutches. If you've ever had an injury in sports, you've used crutches as a temporary support till you healed, and then you put those crutches aside. So we have people that intersect our lives, teachers, parents, coaches who poured into us, inspired us, who got us to where we are today. We came to rely upon them. We depended upon them. They encouraged us for a season, but then they moved on. Maybe we felt abandoned, alone, adrift, unqualified. But after some time, we got some more confidence. We got some poise. We began to think, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this. And eventually, we might even come to the point of arrogance of thinking, oh, why did I ever need him or her for in the first place? One of the hardest things to accept in life is that not everyone is meant to be in our lives forever. If Krishna or God didn't move them away, we would become too dependent upon them. They would at some point stop being a help and become a hindrance. It's good to have people who believe in you, who celebrate you, who drive you forward, but at some point, you have to learn how to encourage yourself. If you're familiar with the setting of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, who is God himself, descended on earth and acting in the role of Arjuna, his devotee's chariot driver, encouraged Arjuna to lean on him and use him as a crutch for the half an hour during which he spoke the immortal words of the Bhagavad Gita. But at the end of Krishna's treatise, it was the duty of Arjuna to then act upon those words, to encourage and to inspire himself. Krishna poured into him, Krishna equipped him, but in the end, he had to take responsibility and make his choice on his own. It's interesting because God prefers not to do things directly. He's looking for a few good people through which to work his unlimited power. He's looking for a few ordinary people who have extraordinary faith. And he would much prefer to make them a conduit for his power and his instruments to establish his will in the world rather than do it directly. Heard about an American, he went to India and he came back and he told his friend, I visited all the various temples in India, and while I was there I found out who God was. My friend said, well, how did that happen? He said, I went to the temple of Lord Brahma in Pushkar. Lord Brahma is the creator of the universe, and he was busy being obliged, obviously by some higher force, to create the universe. I visited the temple of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva was obliged, according to a prearranged schedule, to bring about the dissolution of the universe. I visited the temple of Indra, the king of rainfall, the king of heavenly planets, and he's obliged to create rainfall for good agricultural production and seasonal change. And everywhere I went, every single deity, Ganesh, Lakshmi, Saraswati, Indra, Brahma, Shiva, seemed like they were all doing what they were doing, being obliged by some higher power. But when I went to this temple of Krishna, I found out who God was. Because Krishna was not obliged to do anything. Just standing there in his threefold tribhanga lalitam, threefold bending form, playing his flute with a mischievous twinkle in his eye, jauntily wearing a peacock feather in his hair. So I realized that here is the one who obliges and necessitates every other living being, but he himself has no prescribed duties. And Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita, utsidyo ime loke na kuryam karma chedaham. Karyam karma means everybody else is obliged to work, but I am not obliged to work. There is no prescribed duty. In other words, I create everything, nobody creates me. I control everything, nobody controls me. So when I visited the temple for Krishna, because I could see that here is someone who has no one above him, Ishvara Parama Krishna, that this is the Supreme Personality of God. Take a simple example, a big international corporation like General Motors, There are people in marketing, there are people in procurement, there are people on the assembly line. There's all kinds of people, and they're all working very diligently. But the president of General Motors, the CEO, the head of the board of directors, is out on the course playing golf. In other words, by his power, he's not obliged to do anything, but simply by his power and his influence, everybody else is working diligently in the company. And that God who makes everything go according to a meticulous, wonderful, cosmic scale, that God, we can never pray a big enough plan for him. We can never have a big enough idea or a big enough dream or a big enough inspiration to honor him and push forward his work in this world, that when he hears it, he doesn't wish that we'd prayed for something bigger. He doesn't wish that he could have empowered us beyond what we could ever imagine or dream. And one of the problems is many of us pray to God for crutches instead of praying to him for wings. I heard about an elderly lady in a village, India. She used to go out every day and gather firewood. And the years went by and she got a little weaker and a little weaker. So one day she was carrying a big weight of a bundle of wood, and it fell off of her shoulders onto the ground, and she was unable to lift it back up in her shoulders. So she said, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." And Krishna appeared there before her and said, "What can I do?" She said, "Could you help me lift a bundle of wood back on my shoulders? If God, creator of millions and millions of universes, and you can't think of anything better to ask than to put the bundle of wood back in your shoulders, you could ask in such a way that you never have to work again in your next 5,000 incarnations." But because of limited mentality, she's asking for crutches when in fact she could have asked for wings. Don't try to talk a mentor, a teacher, a coach into staying beyond their usefulness. Learn to let them go. I remember when I was about 10 years old, I went to a grade school in Pennsylvania called the Valley School of Ligonier. And they had hired a sports coach whose strong point was baseball. His name was Stan Partenheimer. And for us 10-year-old kids, in those days, they didn't have gyms, they didn't have creatine, they didn't have steroids, you know, so people weren't as ripped in those days as they are nowadays. But Stan Partenheimer was the exception. He was good looking, he was tanned, he had muscles on his muscles, he was very soft spoken, he was kind, he was compassionate. He had it all. He was our kids' hero, and we would do anything for him. If he asked us to run one lap, we'd run three laps. If he'd asked us to catch 10 fly balls, we'd make sure we did 20 fly balls. We worshiped the ground that he walked on. And not only did he train us in baseball at school, but during the summer break, he also ran the summer camps. And so we just doted on Stan Partenheimer, and we went the extra mile for the 3 years that he was present with us. And then he moved on. And to add insult to injury, the fellow that, can she go stay there or go there? To add insult to injury, the fellow that replaced him was not nearly as charismatic, nearly as attractive. We weren't nearly as devoted to him. All we wanted to have was to have Mr. Partenheimer back. But that was not to be. We never, in fact, saw him again. But an interesting thing happened. We went on to win championship year after year after year after year after year. All the years of Little League, all the games in school, and all the games in Pony League. And so he inspired things in us. He brought to life things in us that we didn't know we had. And even though he moved on, he still was present with us in terms of that legacy. So recognize that the crutches that we stand on limit our speed and mobility. When you're unhealthily dependent upon a habit or a relationship, you significantly limit your ability to feel and to create and to thrive. Any doctor will tell you to get off your crutches as soon as possible, because if you don't walk, scar tissue will develop and it'll make the injury worse and more painful. Raghunath Das Goswami was one of the six major disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his father and his uncle were two of the richest men in the world at that time. They were worth millions and millions of rupees and you can't even count his net worth in terms of modern day currency. But he decided he was going to accept the order of renunciation, the sannyas order, He was going to go to Jagannath Puri and associate with other devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He did that, but every month his father and his uncle would send him a healthy sum of money, something like 3,000 or 30,000 rupees. And he didn't spend it on himself, but he would help to house and host all the incoming devotees that would come from all parts of India to feed them. And in this way, he spent it very selflessly. However, after some time went on, he felt that he wasn't thriving, that he wasn't advancing, that he wasn't prospering in spiritual life to the extent that he would like to, and he identified his being dependent upon this salary, this allowance coming from his uncle and his father every month. And so he felt that he needed to divest himself from that in order to become everything that God had intended him to become. So he no longer accepted that, and he used to stand, this is one of the richest men in the world at that time, he used to stand on the steps of the temple in Jagannath Puri, and when people would exit, usually people would buy a little prasadam, something to eat, some rice or some khichdi, and so he would accept any alms that they would give him, and that was how he would sustain himself. After a while he felt, again, compromised. Here I am, depending, standing here like a woman of ill repute, you know, loitering here, depending upon alms from pilgrims. And what he ended up doing, in India, they have an interesting drainage system in the kitchens. They have a sort of a groove, like a little funnel, and then a hole in the wall, and then there's a ditch outside with running water. It's called an open whatever. Sewer or septic or whatever you call it. So he would stand outside the kitchen, the temple kitchen, and any rice or grains that would have fallen to the floor, they would sweep them out, and he would be outside to catch them as they would come through this little hole before they went in the ditch. And he would take that home to a simple thatched hut, and he would use that for his sustenance. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was the incarnation, devotional incarnation of Krishna, encouraged him so much not to be dependent, to throw away all crutches and accept God as your only crutch, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, God himself, came to the hut of Raghunath Das Goswami and he said, rumor is, the word is on the street, that you're getting sumptuous Mahaprasadam and you're hiding it somewhere and hoarding it for yourself. And Raghunath says, no, Lord, you, that's not right. This is not sumptuous prasadam. It's not cooked in ghee. There's no sugar in it. These are just leavings from the kitchen, you know. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, I know you've got it in here. And he went in by force and he looked at, and he finally found one kernel of this rice from the kitchen floor. And he put it on his tongue and he ate it. He said, delicious. And this was Lord Chaitanya's way of encouraging Raghunath Das Goswami to have only one crutch in his life. And that was to depend upon God. The birds, the bees, thousands and thousands of different species of life, they get up in the morning, they don't have an IRA, they don't have a bank account, they don't have a roof over their heads, and yet every one of them depends upon God for whatever they need for their sustenance throughout the day. And God never lets them down. But what am I saying? Sometimes goodbye can be a gift. You may not realize it at first, but losing your crutch is a gift from God. Don't be sad. Don't lament. Be excited. For the last 30 years here in the temple, people have come and go. The devotees come from afar, and they make a contribution for some time, and then they move on. Vaibhavi and I have learned not to try to convince them to stay or to say that you're making a mistake by leaving. They may have expected Vai and I to be discouraged by their departure, but we've learned to wish them well, walk them to the door, and say with the attitude that the sooner you're gone, the better it is for both of us. When someone announces they're leaving from your life, don't feel sad. Feel excited to meet the new, the better person that Krishna is going to send along. And when there is someone who's supposed to be in your life, they won't find fault in everything you do. You won't have to manipulate them to stay. When Krishna sends people your way, you don't have to play up to them. You don't have to do everything perfectly to keep them happy. You don't need friends who are hard to please. You don't need friends that you have to walk on eggshells trying not to offend them. If someone tries to manipulate you like that, walk away or let them walk away, you don't need them to fulfill your destiny. If you stay open, Krishna will give you people who are not just with you, but who are for you. And there's a big difference. When people are with you, they're with you as long as you perform perfectly, as long as you give them everything they need, as long as you don't make mistakes. But when people are for you, they give you room to make mistakes. They don't need your attention all the time. They give more to the relationship than they take away. I've learned this, that Krishna will always bring the right people into your life, but you have to let the wrong people go. The right people will not show up if we don't let the wrong people go. And if the person you want for a particular task doesn't show up, it means that Krishna wants you to develop that skill. He's waiting for you to launch out, for you to spearhead that program with faith that sooner or later he'll send the right person to accept the baton. Often leadership qualities arrive when you get tired of waiting for someone else to come along and you step out in faith. Don't become too dependent upon other people. Don't forget that Krishna has wonderfully made you, that you have seeds of greatness within inside you. You have the DNA of God himself. He's given you wisdom. He's given you strength to fight your battles. If you keep him first place, the Lord of unlimited potencies works from within your heart. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, Yavan arta udapane sarvata sambudodike tavan sarvasho vedashu brahma nashta viganate. All purposes that are served by the small pond can at once be served by the great reservoir of water. In village India, you have to be very careful to segregate the wells for fear of cross-contamination. So one well is strictly designated for washing clothes, and one well is strictly designated for washing dishes, and one well is strictly designated for drinking water. Because there are small reservoirs of water, you have to be very strict about these kinds of things for the overall well-being of the village. But if you come to a big lake or a big reservoir of water, you don't have to worry. You can wash your dishes, you can wash your clothes, you can take a bath, you can at the same time get drinking water from it. So why go, or why lean, or why become dependent upon others who are limited themselves when you can go to the root, you can go to the source of everything. It is said in India there's a lot of demigod worship. People worship the sun god for health. They worship Indra for good rain, for crops, and so on and so forth. And sometimes they even approach one of the demigods and say, make me immortal. Grant me the benediction that I can live forever. And yet the demigods themselves are mortal. They're not capital G-O-D, who's eternal, everlasting, ever-existing, the beginning, the middle, and the end. They're empowered living beings just like you and I, but they also eventually have to die. Even Brahma, the Lord of the universe, eventually has to die. So why go to the demigods who have to die, who are mortal, when you can go to God who creates the demigods and who's immortal? In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5th canto, it gives an example. If you're going to jump off a cliff, you better jump into deep water than jumping into shallow water. So if you're going to spend your energy worshiping and focusing on some potent being, then it should be the omnipotent, omniscient, supreme Lord for whom we have the name Krishna. It's good to hear others' opinions. It's good to listen to advice. But you can also talk directly to God. You can get transmissions from him. You have a direct line. If someone is browbeating you, telling you what you can or cannot do, tell them, no thanks, Krishna or God and I are on speaking terms. One fellow came up and he asked his minister, my friend said I should go to Africa and be a missionary. What do you think? The missionary said, if you go based on his advice, make sure you take him with you so that he can tell you when to come home. Krishna is saying always that quality is more important than quantity. If you're familiar with the Mahabharata, Drona, who was fighting on the opposite side as Krishna and the righteous Pandavas, he had a lot of sympathy with the Pandavas. He had been the military teacher of all the Pandavas. Dronacharya had made them the great fighters that they were. They were like sons to him. And yet Dronacharya had accepted his livelihood during the 13 years that the Pandavas were living in the forest in exile. Dronacharya had accepted gifts. He'd accepted a salary from the evil-minded Duryodhana. In other words, he'd come to rely upon Duryodhana as a crutch. And so when it came time to choose sides, between the side of darkness and the side of light, he was already compromised. He was already held back by his obligations to the evil Duryodhan. Still, from the Pandavas' point of view, if they'd reached out to him, if they'd talked to him, if they'd persuaded him, they might have been able to get him, the greatest of all the warriors, to switch sides. And what would have been wrong with that? They were outmanned. They were outnumbered. What's wrong with trying to get the balance of power a little bit more evened up? What's wrong with trying to get some of the odds on your side? And yet, they didn't say a word to try to bring Dronacharya over. Their attitude was, if Krishna or God is for me, who dare be against me? Drona, you line up on the side of the unrighteous Duryodhan at your peril. The other side may have more quantity, more soldiers, but our side has quality. The other side have more muscle, but we have the ultimate weapon, righteousness. And to prove it, none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is driving our brother Arjuna's chariot. You can have Krishna on one side of the scale, and you can have the entire universe on the other side of the scale, and Krishna will still outweigh it. Here's a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 8th chapter. The righteous Pandavas are most fortunate because with all good luck, they were entirely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. In the material world, to be dependent on the mercy of someone else is the utmost sign of misfortune. But in the case of our transcendental relationship with the Lord, it is the most fortunate case when we can live completely dependent upon Him. Don't be surprised in your life if Krishna has streamlined your resources. Don't be surprised if He cuts down the size of your army, puts you at an apparent disadvantage. He's not trying to take you backwards. He's getting you prepared for a new level. When you stop depending upon others and learn to lean exclusively on Krishna or God, He's going to bring your way victories that seemed impossible before. He's going to take you places that you could never dream of. Remember that the Father has special care for those children who are completely dependent upon Him. Krishna did not create you to be ultimately dependent upon anyone else. Don't rely on another person to pray for you, to speak for you, to encourage you. Throw down the crutches and learn to walk on your own two feet. Don't depend on others to do what you can do for yourself. Look inside and tap into the unlimited power that Krishna has put into each and every one of us. Like Arjuna, you'll rise up with a new confidence. Like the Pandavas, you'll conquer your enemies and take new ground for the kingdom. You may be stretched and challenged at times, but you'll discover new talents and new gifts. Krishna will send you the right people at the right time. You'll become everything you were meant to be in this life, and in the next life, go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much for your kind attention. And if you receive this message, repeat after me. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. We're going to do some chanting here. And if you'd be so kind as to help us roll up the rugs just before we do that. And this ceremony is called